Welcome to Run It Straight, a show for bold takes on U.S. Major League Rugby action. My name is Robert Meeson, a former MLR player with the Houston Sabercats. Joining me today, I have two seasoned pros from across the world. Hailing from Durban, South Africa, he's a product of the KwaZulu-Natal Sharks Super Rugby franchise. He'd go on to further play in Europe for the Jersey Reds in the Green King IPA Championship, as well as represent the German national team at number 8. He's a former teammate of mine with the Houston Sabercats. We have Aaron Schramm. Aaron, how are you doing today?
Hey, good, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, mate. I'm glad to be doing this project and glad to have you on. You're not one to mince your words, and that's what we need here.
I'll be honest.
That's the point. We also have a seasoned veteran of the game with our third host tonight, growing up in Kilcool County, Wicklow in Ireland, just north of Dublin. He came up through the Leinster Academy, representing Ireland U19s and 20s, before continuing on to Bristol, Connacht, and London Irish, before finishing off his career again with me at the Houston Sabercats. Please welcome Jason Harris-Wright. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Rob. How are you? Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to chatting with the two of you.
Yeah, it should be good. Now, the main point that we're trying to get across in this show is we want the real takes from players that have been in the league. We don't want to mince words. As I said before, we want to call the shots as they are. Boys, anything that you want to add on to this at all?
No, I think just like you said, we're going to, you know, review and preview each week and try and give an honest take. Probably not going to be too politically correct like most podcasts, so we're going to try and tell it as it is and try and add a bit of humor into it, so hopefully it'll be an enjoyable listen for people.
As everyone knows, being a rugby player and being in that environment is obviously quite tough. You learn to take quite a lot on the chin, so I hope no one gets too offended by what you have to say, and we can all have a good laugh afterwards. I think we're going to have fun and a good time doing this.
Yeah, I think that's quite well said. I think the main thing that we want to get across is, you know, it's almost like a show by the players or former players as it is, but it's for the players as well. So hopefully we can get a bit of insight. We have good relationships with loads of players in the league right now on several of the teams, and if we're lifting the veil up to show you what's going on, hopefully give you a better picture of what's going on. We feel that we're different from all the other podcasts and shows out there, so hopefully you find some value and you tune in again next week. All right, we'll start things off with the kickoff. First impressions of USMLR action right now. We've just finished up week 1 and 2 in the league. What do you think's going well right now, Aaron?
So to be honest, the foreign influence has been a great thing for the MLR. It has turned heads internationally. So that's always great, getting that exposure.
I do agree. I think that the MLR has kind of landed on the global rugby stage, so to speak, finally. Everybody thinks of the top leagues around the world, the European Championship, obviously, where you've got teams from all the different European countries. And then, of course, you have Super Rugby and the Japanese top league. It seems that, you know, there are big steps and strides happening with each progressive season as we enter season 4. You know, we're still getting more big name players that are coming into the league and having an impact on it, as it were. Jay, anything further you might add?
I think, like, it seems to be, you know, obviously, unfortunately, last year with COVID, things shut down. But I think what is important, each year it seems to be building and growing. You know, salary caps seem to be going up, which obviously enable, you know, those high-profile players to come to the league and I guess, put it on the map. What seems to be happening behind closed doors is looks really positive. It's facilitating, you know, getting the big names, which ultimately, you know, put bums on seats in the stadium. So it's it seems to be going well. There's obviously some pretty big stars come to some of the teams this year. So and they've been looking good so far.
Yeah, I think there's been a definite effort by I've noticed a lot of the teams from year 2 to year 3, and especially from year 3 to year 4, they have been unearthing a lot of foreign-based American talent, if that makes sense, or Canadian talent for that matter, where guys qualify for the U.S. and Canada, and all of a sudden, when they show up on a team's roster, oh no, we don't have 5 Kiwis on the squad. 4 of them were born in Canada and the U.S., or they have they qualified there through heritage, and so all of a sudden, you've got this hotbed of talent coming in and raising the standard for everyone. So I think it's a great thing to see. And there's I think some of the biggest things that have been happening this year is all of a sudden you got some big name rugby players coming through, and the likes of Matt Giddo and Adam Ashley Cooper for LA. It's a couple of good Argentinian players that are playing with Toronto. Their names are escaping me at the moment, but there's some serious talent coming in, which is always going to be a good thing for the league. Any other insight that you might have had on some of the big name players, Aaron?
I think you've nailed it all. Obviously, I think some bigger names to mention: Jamie McIntosh playing for Austin. I mean, he's obviously played for New Zealand. He's got some incredible experience. Other guys like Ben Foden, you can't leave his name out. There are just so many. So that's really good to see in the league. What I would like to see, though, is the American system do it a bit more justice. I think it's very important to get rugby into schools in America, and then you'll really see it start to take off. So that's what I'd like to see come into the MLR, or come into American rugby, rather.
All right. That's not bad at all. Also, I think one of the really good things that has been going on, that we kind of take for granted a little bit, all of the games have been available on the Rugby Network. This is their brand new platform to provide streaming services for it. If you're overseas, you can get all the matches there. I think it's a great thing that's been going. Instead of having to like subscribe in the past, you could get some of the games on ESPN+. Some of them were getting streamed on Facebook Live. Of course, you have your games of the week, which is really important. Obviously, in the American market, you're going to be wanting as many matches as possible on TV. Getting those viewership dollars in, really raising the standard, raising the salary caps, as it were. Because if you're getting revenue streams through there, then that's the big ticket item. The American media market, that's the goal, isn't it? There's nothing like it in the world.
I think that's a huge one. Even say for over like in Europe, the Rugby Network's been unbelievable to be able to watch the games on. There's no, like you said, there's no sign. Well, you just sign up. There's no, it's not a link. It's not jumping. It's really, really well done, and the games are just made easy. And I think if the league wants to go where it's kind of saying and looking like it's gonna go, then you need to have a platform like that. It needs to be global, that anyone can tune in from around the world and actually see the product and see the players, because I guess especially when it's in its infancy, you need to make it convenient for people. It can be difficult trying to find streaming sites and things like that. So yeah, I found that excellent so far. It's a great addition.
I think one of the biggest points in that also is that it's free. Being in America, you pay for every single app, ESPN, that other sports app, Fox Sports, you pay for all of that. So letting fans watch it for free, I think, especially American fans, hopefully that builds fans and builds interest in the game.
Yeah, definitely. I've been following them on Instagram. They seem to have a pretty decent social media crew as well. They put up some interesting videos. They're throwing in a bunch of graphics on there and some music, and then they seem to be trying to step up their meme game. I guess I'm going to have to delve into that and see if we can get some stuff on there.
That's a big thing now. It's a big thing now coming into sport is like nearly, especially over this side, I've noticed recently, a lot of the teams, their media departments will be trying to like outdo each other with like when they're like announcements for player signings and like different things like this, that they're doing them in all funny memes now online. So it's nice. It's adding a bit of humor and a bit of help. It's actually funny that the media departments will be like talking to each other on Twitter and stuff online about like, geez, you got us this week. You were way better than us, blah, blah, blah. So there's like actually a bit of a competition between those, which is funny. There's some good ones out there. Yeah, Bristol have a very good one. They have some really, really funny guy. Whoever's doing that needs a pay rise.
Yeah, I've definitely seen there's some good quality teams with social media for sure. New England has a few. I know they're, I think, I can't remember if Alex McElby is their director of rugby or what his role is, but he's pretty on point with a lot of his stuff. There's a little bit of an early beef between Los Angeles Giltinis and New England. Some comment came out, they're like, oh, we've been toughing it out in the snow and they've been, you know, chilling out in Hawaii. We're going to show them, give them a good thumping. And then LA came back firing shots. And I can't remember what the meme was.
Yeah, well, good luck to New England.
Cry baby. Yeah. And then the result spoke for itself, didn't it? But yeah.
I'd probably be keeping my mouth shut if I was New England. I'd probably be waiting to see how good they were, and then I'd smack talk them.
Exactly.
In fairness, they scored a few points, but yeah, they definitely came away second best in that match. Anyway, that's a good mix of things that are going well in the league. And now we'll jump into our second segment of the night, and we'll go with the big hits. This is where we want some hot takes, bold statements, some real issues that we're noticing, and we're gonna call it like it is. So, is there anything been catching your eye, either of you at this point?
Yeah, well, I'd actually like to start off with a story first of all. First of all, I hope Houston SaberCats gives their players better cause. I don't know if Jason remember this, but Jason injured his knee, and he had the only manual car in the whole of Texas. So I gave him my automatic, and he gave me his manual. On the highway, you'd accelerate, and your seat would fly back and hit the back seat. So Marty and the SaberCats, so I hope you guys have, you know, sorted that issue out. Maybe it'll make your players play a bit better.
not only it might help performance, you might actually save a few lives, because the cars were that dangerous. I've never had more punctures in my life, and I don't know whether it was just that there's loads of nails on the roads in Houston, or the tires were just abysmal. But yeah, it was funny. Like Aaron said, that's completely true, that story. And what's actually brilliant about it is the seat never flew back for me. It was like I stitched him up with it. But and then when I took his car, I kept getting all the punctures. So it was like we passed cars over, and we just got a load of problems.
Oh, but, man.
Yeah, it was some good times actually. Thinking back about that. The lack of aircon, and some of the lads would be sweating. You pull up and they'd be pumping sweat of training because there was no aircon in the car.
Oh yeah, man, that big Chevy, I remember we had it in the first year, and the air conditioning was broke. One of the windows wouldn't work, this, that, and the other. Oh man, it was a real mess.
Actually, another funny one on that is the car I had before that one, Aaron. I had the first one when I arrived, it was like a piece of shit, basically. And I remember one time I was like, geez, driving, and I felt a bit weird. I was thinking, what's going on here? And I pulled into a garage, and the tire pressure was at, you know, PSI tire pressure. It was at 4. Like, it should be around 30. It was at 4. I remember we were actually driving. It was just after Charlie Connolly. And I pulled into the garage, and the thing was basically just on the ground. And like we were on the way to, I think we were on the way to, I don't know whose house it was. That maybe that Irish guy or something. Yeah, it was some pretty funny stories around the cars. So definitely echo that. Get some new cars, save some lives for the Houston lads.
Mind you,
What is even worse is that I think it was Javier, the owner. The man pulls up in a Mercedes SLS, Houston logos all over it. Like, you know, it's about a $200,000 car.
Oh, yeah. Mike Loya would roll up in that yellow SaberCats car of his, yeah.
Oh, good times.
And then, pulling up next to it in the beater as it's, you know, sputtering along. How you doing, Mike?
Yeah, that was good times.
Oh, man. In fairness, though, some of the players are a bit tough on the cars. The Uruguayans, I think, was it Victor? They had a diesel car and they put unleaded petrol in it.
Oh, like, Jesus.
Must have used them for bumper cars.
It happened three times. They ended up taking a Sharpie to the car and writing on the gas cap, diesel fuel only. I mean, I know we're not the smartest bunch of guys on the planet, but come
that
on.
That must have been Victor, was it? Makes sense.
Yeah, I know the Uruguayans did it once, and then the Uruguayans, I think the Ali's dad came over and he did the same thing, and it was just like, it wasn't a matter of not doing it. It was a matter of when it was going to happen again. Somebody else would do it. I'd say one thing that has actually been bothering me a bit more about the league itself. The TV production's been pretty decent overall, but man, some of the commentators on these games, it's like they're trying to perform in like. Create a tape so they can go and try and do stand-up comedy, and the jokes are falling so flat. I mean, they feel like they have to talk to fill the space and just come up with some absurd things or give weird facts, crazy nicknames. I won't be giving you guys any nicknames, but like. I just feel like for an American audience, like if somebody's new to the sport, and all of a sudden these commentators are coming in and they're throwing in all these different sayings and this, that, and the other. It's like, what is it pertinent? Like what restaurant the guy goes to, if he's out on the field getting smashed or running the guy over, it doesn't matter.
There is a few comments that go down like a lead balloon, but I guess it's difficult as well because you're trying to probably cater. I don't know why if they're doing it for this reason, but you're trying to cater for different, like various audiences. So, like you said, Rob, they've guys who they're or guys and girls that they're trying to, you know, that don't know anything potentially about the game, and they have to be very basic about it. But then they have to try and facilitate people who do know stuff about the game. So it's trying to get that balance of I guess breaking down complex information into a simple manner is probably. You know the best way to describe it, but yeah, there's some funny ones come out there. Right, I sometimes just laugh.
I mean, one of the comments this past week, it was like, "Oh my God, he's more elusive than a politician."
Yeah.
I mean, fair play. Easy enough, but like. I feel like
A big thing I noticed that. Probably could be improved is the lack of TMO, something we've kind of spoken about before, but like and what made me start to think about it, I was in one of the games last week and actually ironically enough the ref completely got in the way of a defender, so he was like in the defensive line.
Austin versus San Diego.
He completely, and whatever game it was, he completely got in the way of the defender, and the defender couldn't make the tackle, and the team scored a try off it, and all the defenders were going insane. They were like, "Ref, what?" And he was like, "No, try."
That was the go-ahead try for San Diego to win.
Happened in the DC game. I'm sure the same.
Yeah, I think it was the DC. I think it was the DC game. That's the one I'm referring to. It probably happened in San Diego.
I think you're right. I think it happened in both.
The ironic thing about it is like there was no TMO, but the actual infringement was the ref, you know. So it was,
blow the whistle, call a scrum, like reset the play.
Yeah, so that's something like it's probably something that we've seen in contrast to games around Europe that there's a lot more yellow and red cards happening because of the TMO and things like that. So probably something that could definitely help and might help the lads stop getting so frustrated.
I think also on the referee point, there was another game, I think the Nola game. I think it was either the Nola player or a New York player went to go and steal the ball. Must have been a Nola player. Went to steal the ball outside of the 22, right on the edge, and the ref sent him off with a yellow card. You know, I understand if it's repeated infringements on the try line, but I mean, you know, for someone trying to steal the ball, going off their feet, giving them a yellow outside the 22 is a bit ridiculous. Make mistakes, but you know, at this level, those shouldn't be the mistakes they're making.
Yeah, I again harping on the TMO. There's been at least two tries I've seen that should have been called back. New York had one where a guy clearly changed his line so that he impeded the defender, and they didn't call obstruction on it. And then there was one, I think Utah scored an early try at Austin in week one. And Lance, he's a good lad. I'm a friend of his, Lance Williams. He's a great player. But I mean, you watch the replay and you slow it down and you can clearly see his foot touches out of bounds before he scores this try in the corner. Now, it looks like a great individual play, but is it a try? I beg to differ. I think that, man, if you're trying to have a professional game and you want to be seen of a high standard across in the world, man, I've been screaming this for many a year since I first got in the league. Why don't they have a television match official? I was talking to Paul Mullen of Utah, and he said he had chatted to one of the refs that he'd got a good connection with, and they reckoned it was some excuse like, oh, the TV camera guys won't have the right angles, so they won't be able to review it. What are you talking about? Like, get a referee in the production van and just have them there on the – because they're all radioed up, right? Have them there and just say, right, hang on, you – pull this one back. If they're there with a producer, they can review it right there on the spot and say, and they can be feeding into the main referee. Like,
yeah, the fact it doesn't even need to be like, it doesn't like, you know, say at international level, they'll have multiple cameras and they'll have different angles and different things, which is obviously optimal. But like, even if it's just a camera issue, even if they only have one camera, like the game camera, then surely that's better than nothing. You know, you can still see more than not reviewing it. So even if it is only one camera, just go, okay, well, we only have one angle, we'll check that angle, and that's the best we can do. And that's all people can ask for. You know, it's definitely better, I feel, to view that one angle than not view it at all.
Yeah, I forgot what league it was, but there have been TMOs where the ref will run off to the side and look at it himself. You know, almost on like a little laptop or like a replay himself. You know, like that could be an option. Exactly. That could be an option if they, you know, don't spend money on a TMO or if it's an issue like that. But, you know, they need something because it's obviously critical plays that can change a game. So I think they need to sort that issue out for sure.
Man, they're flying in enough guys around. They should be able to, like, what's the cost? You have six matches a week. To have an extra six guys just take a flight, and, you know, okay, you toss them $1,000 or whatever. Yeah. Like, to have a level of professionalism about it, it seems mind-boggling to me that it's not that. I don't want to harp on it too much. Most of the calls have been pretty decent, but I think it's if you're gonna have a high standard, it needs to be there. Worst comes to worst, a lot of the stadiums have a jumbotron where you can say, right. You could radio into a producer, right, replay it right there. There's a bit of concern about how many foreigners are on these squads. But I feel like...
Not only that, how are teams managing these sorts of players under the salary cap that the MLR has? That's a question I'd love to ask whoever is controlling that, because there's obviously something a bit...
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a lot of transparency about it, you know. It's just, especially on the player side of it, where... You know, you're kind of screwed if you're in contract and they're asking you to move across the country. Well, you know, as we've said, you know, shit cars. Sometimes you have good accommodation. I know San Diego, they were like in all kinds of different hotels to begin with. And then they've had to all pick up and move to the Las Vegas. And, you know, imagine if you were on like an associate contract getting paid $15 an hour during the week for that. And it's just like... Well, okay, I can go and play rugby for $400 a week, or I can keep doing my regular job where I'm earning $800 a week, you know. No, it's a...
Yeah. Huh? Uber driver, hey, Rob.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, the salary cap is a funny one. There's obviously ways around the salary cap because you're not getting 100 cap veteran internationals to to teams for the salary cap. And even you look the last few years, like Manu, Bastro, guys like that, they're not coming. They're not coming coming for the salary cap amount. So there's obviously something that they're doing outside of the sport. I don't have any problem with guys getting. Like, I think it's only good for the league, you know. Like, I don't think there should, like, they shouldn't have the salary cap as low as it is. It should be higher. And if it is as low as it is, then I'm comfortable with them saying, okay, well, actually, we're going to pay guys outside of that, you know.
100%.
If it's an owner paying them in his business or giving them shares in his company or whatever it may be, like, ultimately, as an audience, as fans, we want to watch the best players play. We want to watch guys who've done, you know, class things in their careers, blah, blah, blah. So, like, it's like saying, you know, in a 100-meter sprint race, you want to watch the fastest guys. Yeah. You don't want to watch slow guys. Mm-hmm. So, it's pretty similar, I think. You want to see the Matt Giddos and things like that. And I kind of think, listen, fair play to you. Whatever way you're doing it, like, you've done well with it.
Yeah, I think America needs to get to a stage also where if they didn't have the international players, they'd still be competing, you know? And it looks like it is going that way. Rugby really is picking up in America, you know, but I think people would like to see more local talent.
Based on that, Aaron, hang on.
Obviously coaching.
How big do you guys think the squads should be? Because obviously injuries happen. And right now you're pretty much locked in 30 players per squad with salary crap.
Yeah, you know, that's obviously a bit of a tough one because of the salary cap. I think if there was no salary cap involved or whatever, I think you should have a squad of around 40 to 45.
Well, I mean, shit, this is what we're talking about. I mean, we're trying to make a stand here, and fuck knows if these owners are actually going to listen or catch wind of this at all. But if you were asking me, I'd say, as you said, the American talent's only going to get better by having bigger training squads that can train full time. You need to have, this isn't like a European system or Super Rugby franchise where you have development squads that are playing against other teams that are just as good as them. You know, I think back to when we had, when we were at Houston and all of a sudden we'd bring in a few guys from West Houston Lions. And the talent disparity, it's like, because we were just, I mean, they were literally guys that were just playing amateur rugby, and then we bring them in for a training session or so. I don't think that's enough. And the same is, you know, you got these development squads, you got Rugby HTX, you got Atlantis 404 program, you got the Utah Selects, San Diego and LA. I know they're trying to get something going, but I've seen the LA one. There's not enough in there right now. It's too ragtag. It's meeting for a training every Saturday. I mean, Jay, do you remember we had the likes of Osei Kalinisau, Olympic gold medal winning Fijian sevens captain, and then man, what was that tiny guy's name? Littler of man. Oh, God bless him.
But that's exactly it. Like there's, like you said, guys coming in from West Houston Lions or whatever, and like, being frank about it, some of them actually don't even know the rules. They don't know all the rules. You know, so like it's unbelievably difficult when you like that. You're trying to facilitate both sides of that. You're trying to facilitate a Ben Foden and a Kalinisau, or you know, and then you've guys like that. How do you train in the same session? You know, how does the coach plan for that session? It's just impossible. Like, and obviously, listen, it's not easy to do because the salary cap restricts. You know, and like if you only have a certain amount of budget and it's not very big, you're not going to go putting money into those kind of lower players, because ultimately it's a results-based game, and you put your money towards what you think is going to win on the weekend. You're not putting your money to, you know, so it's difficult. I think probably the only way around it or one of the ways around it is increase the salary cap, which is obviously an easy thing to say, but that's probably the only way it's going to stop those kind of associate players
in my opinion, if they know, the owners know that they're going to be taking a loss on this, but they need to have a certain standard of what the players that are going out on the field so that there's not a drop off. They're not scrambling for guys. They're not picking up free agents off the road just for the weekend. I mean, San Diego's picked up two front row players in the last week. Guys that haven't been training. Now, are they quality enough? Yeah. Shady and what's the prop's name? He's in Austin. He played at Leicester. He's got a mullet. I can't remember his name right now. He's played for the Eagles. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But the point is this. If you have an expanded roster to 40 players, and then you get a little bit tricky with, like, maybe you have a couple international guys. Take yourself, for example. Right now, you're going to be on a green card. You don't qualify for the U.S., but you're not an international. To get a work visa, you're already set. You kind of locked in on that. I feel that they need to have bigger rosters.
I don't know what the government were doing giving you a work visa.
Hasn't been finalized yet, so keep them a deal.
Yeah, we're not paying you for this, I'll tell you now.
Yeah, another interesting thing actually on that point. We were always told when we were given a P1 visa that you can't convert that to a green card. Well, I found out that is not the truth, and you actually can. You have to be 6 months in the country. It just costs a bit of money to get it sorted, so I think that's why it's kept on the down low. But anyone out there that has a P1 visa, you can convert it to a green card.
Is that a
And what does that, what do you know, Aaron, what, is it just money that basically gets it, or do you have to be, like, married to an American?
I was told it was going to cost about $12,000. Hedley Vandenberg went that route. That's how I know about it. He was just on a P1, and then his was converted. But there was a South African lawyer that I contacted, and he said it would be about 10 to 12 grand. Yeah. So I didn't obviously do that.
Anyway, I think the bottom line is this: if you want to develop American talent, you need to have full-time guys playing on these squads, and that way you can have a few development project guys. But if they're training full-time, you know, the progression is going to speed up.
Even before that, it's got to start from a young age. You've got to get players interested in rugby. Yeah. So kids in America have got to start watching the MLR, saying that's what they want to be. You know, it's got to go.
But I think that's a USA rugby problem. That's not an MLR problem. MLR is focused on making money. Well, how are you going to make money? Putting a good product on the field.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that? You got to have a stable full of good players.
But I guess like what you said, Aaron. So kids now need to be growing up watching that, and like there's not enough rugby internationally so if kids were only to watch USA play, sure, how many games a year do they play? It's not enough for kids. Like, you know, they need to be having stuff to watch every week. So what is the rugby for kids? It's MLR, you know, that's the American. Like so I think even though it might not be the MLR's agenda as such, or it might not be their first, what they're trying to achieve, I think kids are gonna, if they're gonna watch anything, that's what they'll be watching.
If I was in the MLR right now, I'd have a rugby game on Thursday night, Friday night. I'd split them up on Saturdays and Sundays, you know, and maybe throw one on a Monday night. It's a professional league. The fact that on the opening weekend it was like kickoff at 2, then another one at 2:33. Then you know, you're trying to watch it on the rugby network. I've got 5 different streams going on.
I don't think I can watch all
the matches. Like,
yeah. I mean, it would be very tough doing it from a Thursday to a Sunday, just in terms of teams resting compared to other teams. You know, some would have a shorter turnover, but a 3-day window, I mean, that could be done.
Yeah. Put one on a Friday night, and then split it up a little bit. Yeah. If you're in a hotter climate, you got to have the game later on in the evening. We know what Houston and NOLA are like when the weather turns sour. But man, I don't know. If you want to be fostering that good talent, you know, you need to be exposing the public to it. I was just thinking about the Colorado, how they dropped out because they weren't happy with how much American talent was being developed, and they scrapped the entire program altogether. So now they've got this team of like ex-football players, basketball players, wrestlers, this, that, and the other, and they're trying to kick that off. You guys have any takes on that? You know, have you heard much about it or no?
I haven't really heard much, to be honest. I mean, I heard about the injury that happened. Yeah, the other day.
I mean, that's kind of on the quiet, but essentially they've been, the way that they're pushing it, they've got full on production crews out there trying to create this, like, I want to say like Last Chance University kind of thing, where they're making this TV show
All or Nothing.
But I mean, man, they, apparently in an unsanctioned game last week, they went and played this one team in California, because obviously they're hunting for games. They're going and flying these guys out there, and then some idiot, like literally last few minutes of the game, dump tackles one of the California players. Broken vertebrae in the neck, and end of the game right there in an unsanctioned match. So, like, USA Rugby has nothing to do with it. And literally, there's a GoFundMe for the guy running right now. It's like, Jesus. Man, like,
have you got that GoFundMe?
Yeah, I'll throw that in the show notes for sure. But man, like, how's Colorado supposed to benefit?
The cost of medical care. The cost of medical care in America, like, you know, if it's obviously insane, and if you don't have medical insurance, you basically can't pay for it. So that's something as well that probably not the most enjoyable thing to chat about, but the insurance for players needs to be spot on in America, because the medical care is so expensive that, you know, like, you just, players have to, and that's obviously down to their agent or down to players to sort, but that should be something that's from the club side in the MLR, I think, is a non-negotiable, because obviously it's a contact sport. There's a high degree of danger, and you know, young guys don't think about, oh, I need personal insurance, or you know, they just want to play, and they go in, and before they know it, they've picked up a serious injury, and then the clubs turf them to the side sometimes.
I know that we all had insurance last year, that's a big thing. I had it for a while after, and then they gave me the option to continue paying into it, but I went with another option out here in California. But for me, that, you know, this project that Colorado is doing, is like, pack it in. You've just had a guy who's ruined another man's life. Like,
I just don't think that's the way to go. Find wrestlers and
they've had them together for, I think, maybe 2 months now. Like, and they think just like, all right, they're a bunch of great athletes, but man, like, the decision making is what defines high level talent. It's not as much as there's speed and strength and all that. It's speed of execution and what they're doing. That's,
it's just knowing what you're doing. It's just knowing how to play rugby, knowing the rules, knowing the things that can fuck you up, you know?
It's also, having those, that knowledge and things actually makes it safer, because guys know how to tackle. They know how to, you know, to do things. And when your opposite number does as well, listen, there still can be injuries, of course, but chances are you're not going to get someone doing something outrageous, because they've been taught their whole life or whatever to do it correctly. So you're not going
to
get.
I've got a good comparison to that. I was playing amateur rugby for probably 5, 6, maybe 7 years before I got my first chance at a pro contract. I probably had 7 or 8 concussions in that time. Throughout year by year, man, it just happened. Yeah,
you didn't tackle.
Yeah, I didn't miss my tackles, mate. But, they weren't big ones, I'll give you that, but I didn't miss them. But man, as soon as I started playing professional rugby, knock on wood, haven't had one head knock since. You know, the amount of injuries I had playing amateur rugby pales how many I've had having been in professional setups and environments. When you're playing with players and against players who know what they're doing, you're not going to get fucked up. And it's unfortunate that this young lad's, I don't know, well, I'll see if we can get an update on it, but I mean, his life has changed because of this experiment that Colorado wanted to do. I think it's fucking bullshit. All right, now we'll break it down for the 12 teams in the league from the week 1 and week 2 results. We'll start from the top with Atlanta. Any thoughts, boys?
So Atlanta for me is a young and upcoming team. You know, they're starting to build a really nice squad. They had a good win first up against Toronto. I really like the way they played. They had an okay first half against DC and not such a great second half. Like I said, they're a young team, so they're definitely a team to watch out for in the future. Yeah. I really like Ryan Close at nine. He used to be an old teammate of mine, and I mean, he played in New Zealand for a while, great player. He really speeds up the game and keeps the defense guessing.
Not bad. Yeah, so, they're going to cause some problems for a few teams in the East. Their quick ball or the quick ruck attack, I think they'll expose a few sides for sure. Let's see if we can go rapid fire on these real quick, straight into the point. I think the next one we had was New England. Jay, you got anything on them?
Yeah, they looked decent enough the weekend. I wasn't probably blown away by them. Their maul was pretty good. They kind of held on well when they were under a good bit of pressure against Houston, and then executed kind of a lot of good kick space in the backfield in the second half and kind of pushed away. I think the result probably flattered them a little bit, but they did well to kind of come out that well.
Not
the,
bad.
The score.
I think staying in the East, we got New York. Week one did well. I think San Diego's a bit of a shambles of a team, so the result was a bit misleading on that. They game planned well, but against New Orleans, they thought they were onto something with the quick taps. Doing a quick tap inside your own 22 and then like losing the ball one phase later, man, you got to be able to adjust. They weren't able to adjust. Andy Ellis, good signing by them. I think they'll be a contender in the East. Anything on DC Old Glory?
Yeah, I think it was probably a contrast in the last game from first half to second half. I think the first half they probably forced some passes a little bit, a bit frantic, and trying to make the kind of miracle pass, I think. And then second half, they were probably, it looked like they were kind of told, you know, just be a bit more patient, keep a bit more structure. And I thought they actually looked very good when they did that in the second half. I thought their nine,
Danny Tuisotolo,
that went, yeah, I thought Danny Tuisotolo was good.
He's shown well. You can tell he played an off season of rugby. In that first match against NOLA, he connected with a fullback, and I think their 10 who's also was playing Mitre 10 Cup, and they had this brilliant try down the left side against NOLA. You could tell they were just clicking. They were firing on all cylinders.
They looked very good. They looked very good in the second half. Obviously came back, scored quite a lot of points. So yeah, I think they'll definitely be one of the top sides.
Indeed. Not bad. Going a bit further north, you got Toronto. Man, I think this is a cast of the Canadian misfits. If you're a good Canadian player, you get picked up by a proper team in the MLR, and then everyone else is left to play in Toronto. And man, they've been a good team in the past, but this year against Utah, terrible tactical kicking. Their skills are pretty decent. Their scrum was horrendous. They're missing that 10 from last year. He's the Kiwi lad. He was a bit undersized, but he knew how to play. He controlled that team. But the only thing they had really going for him was the international South American boys. They had a Uruguayan and an Argentinian. I think the eight man was Uruguayan. He showed well in spells. Fullback had a few moments here and there. Man, feed them the ball and they will do all right. But man, they were shocking again. Their defense was horrendous against Utah. Man, it left,
there was actually
left
something
a lot
as
to be
well,
wanting.
Rob, I forgot to mention on the DC side, there was someone we all know well, a particular Jamie Dever.
Heavy breather Dever.
I think he's, he played pretty well in the game, but I think he's carrying a few extra COVID pounds. So, Jamie, if you hear this, you need to get on the bike a bit more and do some spinning.
I don't think those are COVID pounds. Those are 12 o'clock McDonald's chips.
The amount of food that
well, whatever they are, he'll be heartbroken because he's like Shallow Hal. You know, he looks in the mirror and he sees something completely different.
He'll come back. You got to fight fat with fat, eh? You know? The best thing going for him was when he was living in the same house as Matt Almeida. Matt Almeida is about a 320-pound Samoan lad from California.
Made Jamie feel good.
Around him, you know, everybody looks a bit small. Man, the amount of midnight snacks that that man would go through. Oh my God!
I've never seen one human being come home with 12 burgers before.
You remember for his birthday when we had like, we were like, oh, we'll do a McDonald's order. We must have spent $100, 50 burgers, like 100 packs of nuggets. Oh my God! It was obscene, obscene. Good anyway, times. Dever, hope you're doing well. Good result for DC week one and week two. And Jamma played like an animal week one.
Oh, Jamma's a dog.
Cannot leave that out. He was an absolute stud in week one. Yeah. So, man, they did well. Let's see who else we got. Closing off the East, New Orleans, Nola.
So Nola look like a dangerous team this season. They play really quick.
I love their centers.
They'll punish teams and they make
centers
mistakes.
Are great.
Yeah, centers are very good, man. Also Cam Nolan, great player. They had a decent first week. They drew at DC, but after an average first half, they really came back. They showed some good fight in the end. Week two, they had a great win against New York. The number 14, JoJo, was on
JoJo
fire.
JoJo Tikiasuba. That's the best. That's the most complete game of rugby I've seen JoJo play. I think he got sent off in that match for that penalty we were mentioning earlier. And man, he had three tries, two great intercepts. The second one, I don't know what the hell New York were thinking. Anyway, go on.
I think one of the positives with Noda that neither team has is depth on the bench. I mean, you got guys like Pat O'Toole that come off the bench. Great.
Tim O'Toole.
He actually started the second week. Good old Tim O'Toole. and then guys like Damian Stevens. I mean, that nine, he really sped things up, and I really hope he gets a start soon because it looks like he changes the game every time.
He definitely showed well. He had a brilliant try. It's a shame that their field doesn't have deeper end goals. They'd be a deadly team for sure. Let's see who else we got. If we're moving into the Western Conference now, we got a good old, our old team, Houston Sabercats. Jay, you got anything?
Obviously a bit of a contrast from week one to week two. Really good result week one, not so much week two. I think, a lot of territory, a lot of possession, probably something that we've all seen, struggle to convert that kind of possession and territory. Again, I think that the scoreline probably didn't do them any justice. It was a closer game than actually, a yellow card kind of changed the game a bit. But yeah, I thought they were a bit unfortunate, but I think just need to be able to convert a little bit more. It seems at times maybe a little bit when they get into the kind of 22 on, it's a little bit one off. So I thought they were actually probably the better team for most part in that week two, but they just couldn't convert, and New England were way more
capable.
Does anyone know that player's name that Charlie pushed?
Justin Larson.
Man, whoever it is, that done some man.
What do you think of that yellow card? Football. Did he strike his face or what? Is that why he got sent off?
No,
he just pushed him in the chest.
Yeah, but that's why he got sent off, right?
Yeah, because he was being a prick and he wants to be a pussy.
I think they just need to be a bit smarter in areas, just with the penalties and man, the amount of ball that they took when they were just standing there as a pod, and then New England was doing this blitz defense. Every single time they're getting the ball, they're losing 5 meters. And I think, Jay, you said it well. They're just kind of like waiting for that big play to happen. I like their 12 that they just picked up from Nola. The 13 seems to pair well with him. And then Matias at 15 has been so much improved from last year. So
I also asked, why change the winning formula? The Houston scrum was really dominating the week before. This week, they changed it up and it obviously didn't help them. So I don't know why you wouldn't stick with your winning side. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Moving further west, we've got Austin, the AGs, the Gilgronis.
Not much to talk about. Austin had two close losses. The defense let them down on both occasions. There was some promise, but they'll have to prove themselves this week against the Cats. We'll see what they do then, and hopefully they have a bit of a better.
I think they're struggling a bit with injuries, as we said. Kyle Brandenbach getting picked up. Man, they were a bit of a hot team coming in. Everybody thought that they were going to do well. They got they brought on.
They did well in the beginning of last season. Didn't
they? No, they got their first win against us in Houston. Yeah. Fuck, man. But they brought on Will McGee or Maggie. I can never remember how to pronounce his last name. And then and then they brought in who's the center? The American center. He got knocked out last week. I can't remember his name right now, but I'm very much surprised. But
is it
he's playing with London Irish.
He was in London Irish. Yeah. I can't remember. Can't remember his name. They brought in actually a fellow South African of yours, Aaron Sebastian the Chavez. Second row, big massive second row.
He's in Austin.
Yeah. I think he's one of the team captains. Yeah, Bryce Campbell. There we go. Bryce Campbell. Yeah. He got knocked down by his own player last week. It was horrific looking.
Oh, shit.
But Sebastian De Chavez, he looks well, but I remember there.
He is. He's a good player. He's a real good guy. Yeah. Actually.
But I mean, they were definitely lacking against San Diego and Utah. They showed well in spells. Off set piece play, they looked well. Everything was rehearsed. Bang, bang, bang. They knocked it out. Open field play, they were just there was a lot wanting there. You know what I mean? But anyway, we'll move on. Let's see. I think we got the San Diego Las Vegas Legion. For me, I think they've relied too much on what they had last year, and they've had an exodus of players, which is hard to replace. Ma Nanu, gone. Jamie Dever, as much as we bag him, gone. Paul Mullen, gone. I'm trying to think of who else.
I
think the biggest one that they've lost is JP Duplessis at 12. Him going to NOLA is huge, huge loss. It cannot be understated the importance of having a good inside center in this league. I reckon it's outside of you, if you said you wanted your 10 to be one of the best guys on the pitch, for me, your number 12 needs to be of an extremely high caliber to get anywhere in this league. You know, Billy Meeks we'll touch on that later. But for me, San Diego looked out of shape. They have good individual players, but they're struggling. Hey, man, you've got some heavy ball carriers. Kenny, CeCe, Somm, get them going forward and put them in space. You know, rugby isn't too complicated at times, but, you know, they got to win. We'll see what happens this week against Atlanta. Maybe that turns their season around. But for me, one of the other offseason signings, Cecil Africa, doesn't do anything for me.
He's a sevens player. You know, he's old. I don't think he's ever. I've never seen him play 15s. He's always been a South African sevens player. So I mean, a bit of an interesting.
Yeah,
signing.
I mean, even before the season was going, it's like, right, okay, you're going to play at San Diego Torero Stadium, University of San Diego, small pitch, like narrow, built for their team when they want to go big, 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 heavy ball carriers through. You know, you don't have a wide pitch where you can put a guy into that much space. You know, he's not going to show as well as some others. Anyway, that's my two cents. Anything on Utah?
Yeah, so Utah, an interesting team for me. I mean, they're serious competitors this season. Over the last few years, it seemed like they've built something solid. They did struggle in the beginning, but now they've got some really good coaches and some good players. They had a great win against Austin away from home, and then looked even better against the Arrows. For me, a player to watch out in this whole competition, I think he's really going to be a standout, is Hagen Schulte. He was our 10 at Germany. When he came into the picture, that whole German side just changed. He used to play at Glasgow in Scotland, and he's dangerous. You know, he really leads the side, and you know, he gets his points across in a great way. Great leader, so no pressure.
Hell of a boot.
Hell of a boot. I mean, he's everything.
If you commit a penalty in Utah in your own half, they're going for points.
Yeah.
The crazy thing about Utah for me is I was having a chat with a few of the lads. Most of their guys work daytime jobs, and then they just come and train in the evening. It's almost like they're performing as a semi-professional team in many regards. And to be putting up results like that, you know, that, that backup scrum half, the try that he scored against Toronto, phenomenal. 60-meter, like,
just
unbelievable. So Utah is definitely a team to watch for me. Let's see, who else we got on there? I think if we said Seattle next, they've made a rash of new signings. They're bringing back Samu Manoa out of retirement. And then they've just signed another Fijian lad who was playing over in France, but he's on the back end of things. I was hearing that there's a bit of discontent between the players and the ownership, or the ownership was thinking, well, we won this year one and year two, we're not going to really have to change too much, and didn't really try to like save on costs or something like that. I don't know. It was a bit of a rumor, but man, the defense is terrible. George Barton at 12, my God, what a mess of a match against Houston. The amount of turnovers that man had, like, man, you're playing inside center, show up in shape and hold on to the ball. Don't, you know, it doesn't much get any better than that. They made a nice pickup of Deb Ferris at 9. Man, I'd say Deb Ferris at 9, moved J.P. Smith to 10. And, man, big loss for them was your mate, Stephen Cotsier, right? Yeah. So they're struggling at hooker.
J.P. also, I mean, J.P. is a great player.
Yeah, I like him.
They've got individual players. I just don't know, as a team, they're just not looking great this season at all.
They're just the defense, and right, okay, you drop one to Houston, then you immediately go to L.A. It's like, man, that's a tough ask. But, man, you just got to make your tackles at the end of the day. You know, you can't let guys get brushing off, and they're coming in high, doing this arm, with their arms, and it was just a mess. They got to step it up big time. Last but not least, especially in this league, they seem to be the number one guys going forward. Los Angeles Giltinis. Anything, lads?
Yeah, I think they look very impressive. Personally, I think they're probably a step above everyone else at the moment, especially which is impressive seeing as they're only kind of new to it. Obviously two big wins in week one and week two, I think, especially in week two, that they just, I guess in contrast to what Houston do, they seem like one of you guys mentioned about one-off runners with Houston. The difference with LA is they seem like they have all viable threats all the time. They just get such quick ball on the front foot, and they just, they're so clinical when they get the opportunities. Some good strike plays they scored from, and then in defense they just, what they do, it looks like really well is they just fill the line. They don't commit loads of guys into dead rucks and wasting guys. They just fill the defensive line, and to be honest, they made Seattle look pretty average in week two. I thought, you know, Seattle, they, even though they're obviously double champions, they were thrown a lot at them, but they seemed really comfortable just to stand there and take it, and yeah, obviously a few superstars in there seem to be kind of running the show, and you know, there's a few excellent guys for them. I think they've been excellent so far.
Yeah, for me about LA, it all runs through. They've got some great names, obviously, in that back line. Their forwards are quite strong. For me, Billy Meeks at 12, he's a good follow on Instagram, to be honest. But man, he's probably the out and out best 12 in the competition at the moment, in terms of what.
I'm gonna drop his handle over there.
It's just
Rob's trying to slide into his DA.
Yeah.
Meeks, it's the creepy guy that sends you 12 minutes.
That's me. And I'm trying to think who else. They're 9. I think it's Goddard. He's class. He's only a young lad. He's only like, but he's, as you said, quick ball, good platform. The one thing that worries me a little bit. They pulled a lot of their subs against Seattle and put them into the game. And all of a sudden, Seattle got like 3 tries in about 15 minutes. And I don't think LA scored again after that. They looked pretty bum average when they pulled off all the international boys. I think...
I mean, obviously, it will be a big difference. Like we said, that just comes with the depth of the MLR. And I mean, it's very hard to follow up, you know, with from performances from Matt Ghetto and Adam Ashley Cooper. I mean, they're two stars of world rugby. So obviously I think things would dip when they go off specifically. But I mean, yeah, I don't think the reserves will be a problem in this competition. I just think because they'll fucking smash everyone. But yeah.
Yeah, I think if it was tighter, they would have just kept the starters on.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's a look at the past few weeks and each and every one of the teams. Might touch on them a little bit more as the weeks go on, but I think we need to get that across in week one while we put out this first episode. Right, now on for the real shot callers. Week three predictions, rapid fire. Here we go. Aaron, just answer first and then Jay. All right, first match, New England hosting Utah. Go.
Utah for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aaron Utah.
I'm
going to
back
well.
New England on this one. I think it's their first home match in ever. So I've got New England that. DC hosting Toronto. Go.
I think DC should take that quite easily.
Jay.
Yeah, I seem like I'm copying Aaron here, but I'll go DC as well. I thought they're really impressive second half.
Yeah, I'll agree with that one as well. Toronto just looked like their defense was shit. Third match, Atlanta hosting San Diego. Aaron, go.
So I think I'm going with Atlanta there. Yeah, like I said, young side, I think they're going to give San Diego a bit of a shock.
Jay.
I'll actually go opposite on this one. So I think San Diego it'll be close, I reckon. But I just think maybe the experience of San Diego might be a bit much for the kind of more inexperienced Atlanta.
Right, I'm going Atlanta on this. I think the quick rook ball will just tire out San Diego. Last match, the Texas Cup. Austin versus our old team, Houston. Aaron, go.
So after last week's performance, I definitely cannot go with the SaberCats, so I'm going with Austin.
Yeah, this was the toughest one for me. I was kind of 50-50, but I went with Austin. Austin. But I couldn't into
all
it
right,
too much.
Well, screw you both. I'm back in Houston on that. I think. Yeah, well, we'll see. I didn't in week one. We both in week one went against Houston, and they showed us wrong. So there you go. Right.
And then you went both with them in week two, and they showed you wrong.
So,
yeah.
So one of us is definitely going to be wrong this week. All right. All right. Must watch match of the week or any call outs that you've got.
For me, I think it's going to be Utah and New England. That's going to be a great match, just great rugby from both teams. Like Jay said, I think Austin and SaberCats will be another great game. Probably not two of the greatest teams, but it'll be a good matchup.
Jay?
Yeah, that's probably one for me. Same as Aaron, the Austin-Houston one, just because of obviously the rivalry, the proximity of where the teams are and stuff. So that's definitely one I'll be tuning in
for
to
me
watch.
It's the New England Utah game, and we're going to find out if Utah is for real based on this match. It's a hard trip to go that far east. New England first home match, and their man Whippy, who got the red card, got dropped to a yellow, and he's back in the match. He played extremely well. In terms of my call outs, I'm trying to think. Adrian Boyson for SaberCats. I want to see him melt somebody in that Austin game. I'm dead serious. Adrian, if you're listening to this, move your weight around and absolutely crucify someone. I'm telling you now, if somebody needs to end somebody in that match, if Houston's going to stand a chance. And I want him to be that big man. He's had a few nice runs. I want him to melt somebody on defense. Calling you out, mate. Get it done. Shram, anyone?
Yeah, my call out of the week, I think, is going to be to Owen Hagan, the 10 for Utah. Like I said, you know, I put a lot of faith into him. So I hope he carries Utah over the line for me. I think he will be the difference. So good luck, Hags.
Okay.
I'll probably go with our good old mate Jamie Dever. I'm expecting a big reaction from him this week after I've seen him. I saw in a story he was on the spin bike, so I'm expecting a nice lean Jamie for this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, they are facing Toronto. He better win about 5 scrum penalties, hands down, solo by himself. So no fucking arm tackles, Jamie. You also can tell that's when he's tired.
I expect that if Charlie Connolly's playing for Houston, he's obviously pretty effective scrum time. So I imagine they'll look to win it against
McIntosh. That'll be
Matt, yeah. I hope Charlie gets a start because I remember last season he scrummed the Beast and
he ended his career. We joke about it. The man's not played rugby since.
There may have been a few more factors that he wants to go back to South Africa, but anyway.
Charlie is a great scrummager. You know, he's built like a brick shit house. So, Charlie, also, man, have a good one. Scram the shit out.
Yeah. All right. I think that closes it up for Run It Straight Week 1, Episode 1. Man, we call it like it is. We call the shots. We'll see you next week. Enjoy it. Cheers.